Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, so my name is Aaron Stewart. I'm the Chief Visionary Officer of Job.com.
Aaron, thanks so much for finding time and joining us on the Ivy Podcast. I want to spend some time talking a little bit about, you know, the role of the Chief Visionary Officer, what falls under the purview. It's a very unique role, very exciting. But before we do that, give us a thumbnail version of your career background, where you come from and what has led you to building something like Job.com.
Yeah, so I actually start with very humble beginnings. I'm from a town just north of London in the UK called Luton. I grew up shoulder to shoulder in a very diverse community, which is one of the things I'm very proud of and that I love. But it also showed me all different walks of life and I guess different classes, different work cultures, backgrounds. And I think that was one of the things I think that kind of then drove me to when I finally reached the point of, you know, I did a degree, I did a master's degree, and then I entered into the employment market. I think recruitment was a passion of mine. I love the premise and my goal with everything that I do is to help as many people feed their families and pay their bills as possible. That is the culture, at Job.com. I started originally for a company called S3 that owned a job board called the IT Job Board. I thought I learned everything about job boards and how to do them in a matter of weeks. This was in the 2000s. That was not necessarily the case, but I left immediately to then go and start my own job board, which was called Jobs from Blue. That was a huge lesson for me of failure. It really was. It was a dreadful failure. And actually, when I reflect now with the knowledge that I have, I'm like, oh. But at the same time, it was a fantastic story of success because I learned so much from that experience, maybe a bit more aggressive than you'd want for someone. But this was at a time where I had no children. I had no responsibility. I wasn't married, you know. So if you're going to take a leap of faith, take a leap of faith, right? But it led me to then do a business called iResourcer. And iResourcer then got backed by a group called Hamilton Bradshaw. Hamilton Bradshaw was a private equity group in London, specifically focused in the online recruitment and online recruitment space. They set up a separate group called Hamilton Bradshaw Technology. I was made chair of that. We went out and did many different recruitment technology acquisitions or buy-ins or stakes with shares. This was absolutely a pivotal point in my career where I learned almost everything holistically about the recruitment technology industry. And I utilized that in that sort of knowledge, I guess, to kind of drive me later on in my career. I set up a business in 2012 called My Job Matcher. It was artificial intelligence with job aggregation. It allowed a job seeker to find work easier in the UK. The average job seeker would spend 7 hours a week looking for work online and would register with 21 separate employment sites. It was a job looking for a job. So we set up this system called My Job Matcher. It was very, very popular, grew to 7 million registered users through arbitrage model. And in 2017, we decided we wanted to come to the US. We wanted to come here, you know, 7 times larger market, cookie cutter. And when we came here, we went through the process of doing mergers and acquisitions, bought a few businesses here. And one in particular that we bought was Job.com. We acquired the business back in 2017. And then it was at that point, we then began to build an automated recruitment solution that we have today. So that's my career.
Wow, what a diverse background. And I love what you highlight in terms of the quote unquote failures, necessarily, in the sense that those were the learning opportunities that really set you up for the success where you're at right now. That's how I founded and started a lot of my own companies as well, you know, failed most of them. But at the end of the day, that's the kind of the process that you have to go through, cut your teeth through that progress, essentially learn from all of those mistakes. And that's what sets you up for the success where you are right now.
I completely agree. I think sometimes entrepreneurs sometimes fear failure. And it's right to fear failure, right? Because there's different degrees of failure. Failure could be losing the shirt off your back, okay, which would be a disaster. But sometimes we have to, we shouldn't shy away from failure or see it as a taboo. Failure is success because it's a great opportunity to enrich yourself and learn how not to do something. So,
right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And fast forward to, you know, where you at right now and, you know, with the acquisition of job.com. Wow. What an asset, just the domain alone. That's, you know, that I can't even fathom that. That's so valuable in itself. And with the business model and everything behind it, I'm sure that was quite an achievement that I'm sure you're very proud of.
Yeah, it certainly is. I'm very proud of us as a team, you know, right. We are a team at thebusinessthejob.com. I am just one of the faces of many people that make all of this possible. I think that, for us moving forward, you know, we are here to try and transform the way that recruitment and staffing is done. And, and job.com is the brand that we choose to do it with. And we're delighted to be able to do that.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Congratulations on that. With the current role as a chief visionary officer, which is not the most common C-suite executive type of title, so to say, tell us a little bit more about that. What falls under your purview? What's your area of responsibility within the company?
So I describe myself in the business as the lantern, and my job is to lead from the front through innovation. I love technology. I'm a millennial. I'm an older millennial, but I'm still a millennial, so I'll clutch on to that one. And I like to look at how we constantly innovate the way we utilize technology, the journeys that we use for candidates, the experience that we create, and also how we can potentially just uplift the recruitment and staffing market. So the core premise of my responsibility is to look at the market, understand where it's going, what technologies are coming, the application of technology to improve the way processes are done. And then outside of that, it's also to kind of drive strategy as well, right? You know, I'm here to drive strategy. I am not a CEO. That's not the role that I play or any form of that role. I'm not operational either, like a COO. I'm very much an innovative leader and kind of the face of, you know, communicating how we're driving forward for innovation. We have some very, very elaborate plans and things that we're working on. Some of it is much more near term. Some of it's much more innovative into the future. There's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of failure in there too. But, you know, innovation is about boiling down until you find the true essence of what you're trying to achieve.
That's very exciting. And it makes a lot of sense from that perspective, which you couldn't have set me up any better for the next question or topic I want to talk to you about is around innovation. You've mentioned that really as a visionary officer, you know, one of the core strategies and priorities for you, I'm sure 24/7, is how do you innovate? How do you take your company to the next level? What are the different trends and insights that you're observing? Share with us any practices or strategies that really help you build and foster that culture of innovation within the company.
Yeah, so one of the key areas for me is constantly having a handle on what the market is doing. Okay, so reading. Okay, let's look at what competition is doing. Or when I say competition, there's a very much a collaborative ethos within the online recruitment and recruitment space. You know, this is one of the very unique industries in the world where we all kind of, lots of us work together in partnership. But I spend an awful lot of time and energy looking at, firstly, what everybody else is doing. And then secondly, trying to live and breathe the job seeker experience to understand if we could do it better, how could we do it? How could we engineer an experience that's better? I'll give you a prime example, validation of data. You know, I've been up for various debates in regards to this, but if you Google this statistic, 85% of candidates lie during the hiring process. 46% of them will fail in the first 18 months, and their average cost of failure will be 33% of their salary. Now, when you look at that, you could look at kind of, you know, almost looking at the candidate in a negative light. It's not about looking at the candidate in a negative light. It's about giving them a platform and a main stage that they can you know, validate everything that they do have. Because if you, let's say, get a role that you weren't perfectly suited to, and you maybe told some things during your resume and hiring process that weren't entirely accurate, it's not just the company that suffers. It's the person who didn't get the job who should have got the job. Okay. And it's looking at those key metrics and those statistics that are fed back to us to say, well, that's a problem. How can we utilize emerging technology to fix it? And it start looking then at the sort of technology toolbox that's out there to say, how do we create an experience that starts validating everybody's credentials and creates this digital alter ego around their career? So that's the prime example. So it's just reading and paying attention to what's going on.
Right, right. Absolutely. No, that's very interesting. And from a standpoint of different, obviously, you're very experienced in the staffing and the talent acquisition space and recruitment with your previous company, where you're currently working on with Job.com. What are the different trends and insights that you are very passionate about? What are you researching these days? What's on your plate in terms of the next big thing?
Well, anyone in the space will have heard in the last 10 years, probably the statement, the war on talent. Okay, everyone's a war on talent. You're only as good as the people you hire. Well, Gen Zs are moving work every 2.2 years. Okay, so it's not the war on talent. It's the war on retention. Okay, right. You know, we need to keep people. Okay, statistically, it costs $4,129 to hire someone in the United States across all verticals, all sectors. Okay, so but when they leave a job, it's 33% of their annual salary. That's the cost of the company. And it's not just a physical financial dollar cost. It's the loss of knowledge. It's the impact of the team. It's the potentially the unsettling of other members of the staff that are in the company too. So my true mission and passion is staffing recruitment companies till now have been focused on always just putting in great talent. How do we put in great talent that stays? And how do we look at cultural fit? How do we look at mapping their future career potential, earning potential? When would they want a job title, you know, promotion? And you can utilize predictive artificial intelligence to do this. Predictive AI can look at all of the macro trends of all resumes of today and historic in order to start accurately predicting and create relationships behind, you know, I now know that Aaron in the next 3 years job title should be based on all of this market data. You feed that information to companies to allow them to manage their workforce better. They manage the workforce better, inherently retain people longer. And the underlying principle of all of this is if you stay at a company longer, it's typically because you're happy. And that is the real thing that matters the most, right? We spend a third of our life working. You should do it and be happy. Right. Okay. Because we can talk all the complex technology you like, and we can talk about all these amazing things all day long. It boils down to basic human need. Are you happy?
Yeah, I love that analogy. And you know, what you've mentioned really resonated, the war on retention. That's very powerful, and in the sense that I see a lot of, you know, I talk to a lot of executives on a daily basis, and that's the premise behind this. Yeah, it's, you know, you have great access to candidates worldwide now with everyone shifting to virtual, but your competition is 10x, and you know, at this stage with so many other bigger brands, bigger companies after the same talent. So retention really does become the core aspect of really surrounding yourself with the same like-minded people, A-type players. So that's very exciting. And with companies coming out of pandemic and designing their organizations, whether in the hybrid structure or still staying remote, what does future of work look like to you? What are you seeing in terms of the industry? Maybe I know it's very hard to predict and you don't really have the crystal ball, but what are some of your predictions where the organizations should be focusing on when it comes to the future of work?
Yeah, so if we talk about work environments, you know, I'm very pro hybrid. I think that if there's anything positive at all that can be drawn from the pandemic, is that we saw that our labor force has the tenacity to work remote and remain productive. In fact, in some cases, more productive. I think it's really important that companies don't forget that and start to insist on a constant office work environment. I do believe that there is definite significant importance to getting around a table together with my peers and spending some time with them or seeing a customer face to face. But I don't think it needs to be anywhere near the gravity that it used to be before. I think people can work from anywhere because it was all work from home as a terminology. Now they've changed the terminology to work from anywhere. And I like the terminology work from anywhere because I believe that work should fit in around our lives, not our lives fit in around work. Okay. You should work to live, not live to work. Now I know that doesn't always count. People with careers, heavily driven people, they are and I have been that person too. Listen, I'm kettle pot black right now. I've been completely focused on my career, but I also understand the lifestyle balance. In fact, I understand the lifestyle balance far more now as a father. When I was younger and I was not a father, all I did was work, you know, and that's fine. As a father and as a parent, I understand the need now to have that balance. And I think that having this hybrid work culture is absolutely essential to gaining that balance, making continuing productivity. And again, basic human need, keeping people happy. So that's what I believe is the future of work when it comes to where we will work.
Right. Yeah, no, those are, thanks for sharing those perspectives and just speaks to kind of the high IQ when it comes to leadership style and what's your overall leadership mantra. And, you know, unfortunately, not a lot of executives really get the whole concept of the work-life balance, thinking, oh, it's just, it's just a spoof that people are weak and just, you know. But on the other spectrum, it's really some executives that run very successful organizations. Really build that type of culture from the very beginning, from very early days when the company is just two people at a startup. And I think that's part of that DNA that really carries on, because as a founder and the CEO, it's the culture is at the end of the day, 80% of who you are and 20% of what you aspire to be. So that's kind of, you know, I love what you're talking about from, you know, from the overall leadership perspective.
Yeah. Culture is everything. You know, and I love that you've brought that out, because it is, if there's any executives out there that are worried about potentially giving that level of trust responsibility to allow their workforce to remain remote, just remember that if you've built a solid culture, you have nothing to worry about.
Right. Absolutely. No, that's precious and powerful advice. When we talk about building the culture and as an executive, I'm pretty sure, and you help other companies to find the right talent and retain. But for you personally, within your organization, I'm pretty sure surrounding yourself with the best people is 24/7 full-time job, whether you're actively recruiting or you're not. Share with us any strategies that really help you to attract the right type of talent to your teams.
Yeah, so we're looking, again, it comes down to culture. We're looking for people that value our mission, which again is to help as many people feed their families and pay their bills as possible, that have a passion to do that utilizing technology. We typically find we attract people to the company because they're drawn to us because they believe in what we're trying to do. They love the innovation side of it, and they love the fact that we are, you know, in comparison to other businesses in this industry, we are very small. The Randstads of the world are doing $20+ billion a year. And this is definitely the story of David and Goliath. But they're drawn into a digital future. They're drawn into more conscious recruiting. And rather than just a sales driven, get a candidate into that job and get a fee, which has been very much a recruitment culture for the last three decades. It's like, no, let's get the right person into the job. And because they're happy, they'll stay. And let's use tech and create a great user experience and environment that takes them through a journey that reflects well on the company that they work for. So from the moment they go for the job application, they're already being immersed in culture and experience and values, you know? And again, that's an experience that, across the board, you know, we haven't necessarily seen across the wider staffing market. And there's nothing wrong with that. This isn't saying that there's anything wrong with the past. The past has brought us here, but we naturally must evolve. Mm-hmm. Okay. We naturally must evolve like everything in life. So we think we attract talent that way. I like attracting talent through network. Okay. I believe in the power of trust and referral. I trust my fellow man and woman. I like going through that process. We are very blessed. There are some, you know, fantastic team members in our company that have been with us for 10 years since the beginning. You know, and I'll actually give like two of them actually a shout as well, because I think they deserve it, because they were so young when they joined us and they've gone through university while they've been with us. We put them through their education, they stay with us. You know, but like Harvey Awadzi has been with us for almost 10 years. Jack Howe's been with us for 9 years. And when they join us, they're very young, very junior guys. Now they're some of the most important assets that we have in our company, just to name a couple of names of some of our sort of superstar team members. And all the rest of the team there at Job.com are superstars too. You know, we really do run shoulder to shoulder. We have been through so many challenges as a company, so many highs and many, many lows. And it's at the weakest, hardest times you truly see the power of teamwork and the value of your team, because they stay with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that, you know, I recently made a post on LinkedIn and it resonated with so many people, that the philosophy I also subscribe to is the best job is not always posted, and the best candidate that you're looking for is not always looking. So every time I talk to anybody or get to meet or host people on a podcast or whatever the case may be, it's always that kind of, even at the back of the mind, evaluation is this the right type of person that I would want to work with or work for? And it's having that mindset, I think, brings a different perspective on, as you build relationships, as you build your networks professionally or personally. I think that's, you know, something that's very interesting to me. When you get candidates in front of you, when you interview, as they go through multiple rounds of assessments, they meet with the groups of folks within the organization, but when they sit down with you, share with us, give us an insight of an interview with Aaron. What does that look like? What types of questions do you like to ask? And more importantly, I'm curious, what do you look for in some of the responses when you talk to them?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I am the most unconventional person ever. I'm normally sort of brought in towards the end because I'm just a people person, right? Mm-hmm. So I like people to feel comfortable with me. I don't want them to feel necessarily on the spot or challenged. I just have a conversation. So when I ask questions, I'm not asking questions in sort of a scripted format. It's almost like me and you are sat at a bar and I'm trying to learn more about you. And I'm going to tell you more about me too. And I always tell them some negative things about me or things where I've made mistakes, because it normally makes people feel more comfortable, because then they're like, oh, this guy isn't perfect, you know? But what do I look for? I look for people with passion. Okay. I look for people with passion who are looking to try and achieve something more. I want to know what they're really here for. So it's like, okay, we're all here to get paid. I get that. What are you really here for? Why? Why do you want to get paid? What are you doing? Where are you going? How are you going to achieve that goal? And I want to learn more about their ambition, what drives them, what makes them tick, because then I start to kind of cross comparison that to, where do I believe this role is going to take them? Are we going to fulfill their human needs, basic and more and higher level? You know, they might have, we had a couple of guys work for us years ago, which I remember distinctively. And one of them's goals was he had moved from Eastern Europe here to the US as a sort of, you know, younger child with his parents. And his goal was he wanted to relieve his parents of having to work or earn money anymore. That was his driver. And it was a cultural thing. It was a background thing, Eastern European culture thing. And it stuck with me. And he had a dream that he wanted to buy his father a car, you know, and he had all of this ambition. It was a sales role. So he was in this sales role. So he was driven by money commission. But it was also that he had these morals and values towards family. And that it was family that was driving him here to try and succeed. And for me, I'm like, when someone's got that as a motivator behind them, I know they're going to push the envelope to be successful for this company, and they're going to jump through hoops. So then we have a co-driver together, because his goal is very much interlinked with our goal, because his success is our success. And that's the sort of stuff where I hear that stuff and I'm like, you're hired, you know, and that's what I'm looking for.
Well, that's a great example of that, and brings back memories being also from Eastern Europe and coming to US and looking for ways to, so that exactly, that was also the motivation when me and my sister first came here as well, is just building something where, you know, your family, your parents don't ever have to kind of go through what they have been going through. So that's very exciting that, you know, that example very, you know, resonates on so many levels. And when I talk to a lot of executives, it's also the art of interviewing. It's, you know, it's a combination of science and the art, and it can never be just one specific formula that you adhere to. And I love what you were saying in the sense that it's a conversation. It's an opportunity also for the candidate to get to know you better. Yeah. What type of person you are, what type of leadership, you know, styles do you subscribe to? Because at the end of the day, like you were saying, finding that perfect match with their ambitions is, you know, the most important goal as part of the interview, you know, is as hard as it can be done because it's such a short conversation, and to be able to make that decision, I think it's very, very difficult. What are some of the questions that you like to ask that really help you reveal the character of the candidate, or something that maybe you throw a curveball and try to see how they react? What are the different scenarios that you put them through?
Yeah, so sometimes we ask sort of questions that put them in a scenario. We're looking for dedication from our side. So we all understand that, you know, we work a 9 to 5, but really, if you want to be successful, you know, and we want you to be successful, we need to have the commitment from you that maybe you might have to go out of your comfort zone on certain scenarios. So we'll ask questions related to that, that like if you were faced with this scenario and it was a Sunday morning and you noticed, let's say on the technology side, there was an issue with the tech system, you know, would you just ignore it till Monday, or would you get to work and try and resolve it, and would you raise awareness to the executive team? And when they sort of give you the answer, they're always going to answer typically in the way that they know that you want them to answer, but they've also emotionally committed themselves to have that mentality when they come forward. Because if they don't do that, it's like, when we interviewed you, you said you'd do this, right? You know, you said you were happy with doing this. So you kind of tee them up for those sorts of things, because, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, in the world of technology and doing things, you know, it's, you know, we have challenges 24/7, you know, constantly. So that's an example. Other examples are, again, just more about, sometimes I just take it away from work as well. I want to just learn more about maybe other, you know, sometimes unsung hero stuff, which is like, what are your interests and why? What brought you to that moment to doing that? Why did you do that? And why have you pursued this? And sort of drill in more to just the other stuff that matters to them. Because as you start to learn more about what matters to them, it allows you to kind of truly identify whether, firstly, this person is going to be a fit for the company. Because the last thing we want to do is hire someone that doesn't feel happy working with us or doesn't fit with our culture, because it's a waste of their time, bad experience for them, bad experience for us. But also it gives us an opportunity to make sure that we place them into a role, you know, better.
Right. Right. No, those are great examples. And thank you for sharing them. And for any of our listeners, if you are going to be interviewing with Aaron, now you have some insider information.
Now they know.
Right. Right.
Well, I'd hope that you'd watch this before you came to talk to me, right? You should be doing research on the business, on me and everything else before you go for an interview, so you're best prepared.
Absolutely. So, you know, you bring up a great point, and I get a lot of feedback from the guests that actually participate on our podcast, is that a lot of times the candidates that they interview, sometimes they do bring this up. Oh, I actually listened to your conversation on podcast, on Ivy podcast or any other platform, and where you actually spoke about some of the things that you subscribe to or you follow. I think that's, you know, a unique strategy for a lot of executives to take that route, to build that particular brand and get that message out there, because, you know, you can only get so much from the About Us page on a website, and you can't really get an understanding who's behind it. So I find it, you know, a very, very interesting strategy for a lot of the executives. And Aaron, in closure, I'd like to talk a little bit about you personally from a standpoint of what's your content diet is looking like. What do you consume on a daily basis for learning, self-actualization? What are the different sources? Share with us those.
Yeah, so interesting. So I am not a person that sits there reading books specifically. I love reading articles, looking at the news, and I love research papers. I'm like research paper, you know, mad. So, and I will I will spend way more time than my wife likes reading stuff. And at the moment, something that I'm really kind of, and it's not related to the job market. This is just related to businesses. Understanding the importance of profitability in today's fourth industrial revolution. And I've got this kind of big thing at the moment where it's like, how do we view profitability, whether it's short term or more longer term? And realistically, we're at a point in humanity's growth curve where we obviously have to create sustainable businesses, but we also need to invest heavily into creating a sustainable future. And that comes in many different ways of clean energy, space exploration, utilization of artificial intelligence. And those businesses that you use to do that won't have any line of sight to profitability for decades, you know. And I've got a piece that I'm working on at the moment for NASDAQ, which is called Is Profit a Thing of the Past? And it's not necessarily saying that, oh, well, you know, we'll be running businesses and they'll just lose money forever. But it's just kind of looking at the structure of companies now, that if you really are creating value innovation that drives a certain silo sector or market into the new digital future, you know, how much are we investing into that for a greater good? And that's something that I'm quite really, really, really deep into right now. And sort of looking at, you know, decentralized artificial intelligence as well. And there's a gentleman that's part of job.com. He was actually part of one of our acquisitions, who's heavily, heavily into that. And you know, it's very, very interesting. And also vertical farming, just out of the blue, vertical farming. I don't know if you know much about that, but vertical farming, how we'll do farming within, you know, gigantic skyscrapers in city centers. So it's something that I'm also really interested in. So outside of just the recruitment space.
Right, right. Wow, that, those are very, very distinct and you know, different topics that you subscribe.
There's more to me than just recruitment, right? So, because everyone expects me to start going on more and more about human capital, and obviously I could, I talk about it, but just to give some dynamic, you know, there, my passion for just the kind of, not just the future of work, but the future of humanity. Yeah. Is but I just look at the future of work silo. That's my contribution. That's my token towards everybody in the future. But my broader vision is, what's the future for humanity? I'm blessed to have five beautiful children, and I care about their future. I want to know what's coming,
right,
and how I can make an impact.
Very interesting. Very insightful. Aaron, Ken, thank you enough for your time today.
Love being on the show. Very
important, powerful conversation. My personal learned quite a bit, so I really appreciate all the insights. Going to stay in touch with you, and perhaps, you know, we're going to do another episode
in
about
a
year or so. See how much have transpired on your guys' quest to dominate the world. So definitely appreciate all the insights today.
Sure. Thank you so much for your time, and I would love to come back on the show. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.